Well, hello, friends. This is the continuation with work in the Leo chapter of Esoteric Astrology. We're on page 289. We have just been discussing what a truly self-conscious individual is. He has to have a plan and a program. He needs direction, purpose, and plan. But also an awareness of the soul or the consciousness of the active agent of the plan. And that is the soul on its own plane. So it seems that so many people who think they are actually self-conscious are not. Not in the sense that DK is here discussing. More than awareness of oneself as the dramatic center of one's life, more than passionate emotional promptings which feel intense but are not revelatory when it comes to the full scope of a human being's identity, much more is needed. A deep awareness of the contents of the aura. What has long been forgotten in the subconscious, all that must come to light. And also, what is still inaccessible and unavailable in the superconsciousness, this too must come to light to make the truly self-conscious individual that it is the function of Leo to produce. We are reading here on page 289. There are two subsidiary yet potent keynotes of the Leo person upon which I should touch this point of the nature of the influences wielded by Leo are to be clearly perceived. Subsidiary yet potent keynotes. These are the will to illumine, closely related, I would say, with the symbology of the sun and of the solar logos, the sun being for our solar system the great source of illumination. These are the will to illumine, which constitutes the driving urge towards self-knowledge, and eventually all knowledge is self-knowledge, as the concept of what the self is expands. So this will to illumine, which constitutes the driving urge towards self-knowledge, self-perception, and intellectual positivity. The Leo individual becomes sure of his point of view, and through the power of mind, stimulated by Uranus, is able to overcome many conditions simply ruled by Saturn. Essentially, I think Uranus is a more powerful planet than Saturn, and I think it is certainly growing in that direction. So the will to illumine, to cast light upon oneself, and eventually upon one's larger self, and eventually upon the whole, which is also oneself, and also the will to rule and to dominate. This seems a strong personality motivation, but eventually, as we learn in White Magic, there is a type of positivity or domination of the soul, which must eventually take its place in the life of man. It's in the section where he discusses personality instincts and soul instincts, if you will. the will to rule and to dominate, which is of such a controlling nature in this sign, or in those who are strongly influenced by this sign, and of such a subtle potency in the Leo type, meaning that the expression of this dominance will not necessarily be crude or easily seen, but will constantly be present. So the will to illumine seems a strongly positive influence. The will to dominate, it can be positive or negative depending upon which factor of man is dominating or is seeking domination. It is the will to rule which leads a person born in this sign eventually to achieve self-mastery and the control of the personality. Here we see a positive expression of it, because the person has identified as the soul, and as that soul seeks dominance over the lower self, the personality, the king of beasts, the elemental nature. And this, for either a good motive or a selfish one, we are told that initiates of the first 2 degrees may observe all the purificatory necessities, but only because they know it's safe to do so, not because they are selfless in any respect. Let's just say that selfishness, in its cruder aspects, is largely overcome at the second degree, but we're told that even those who achieve the second degree can deviate. So the will to rule one's lower nature so that one can have greater power, that is also a motive. The will to rule one's lower nature so that one can better serve the plan from altruistic motive, that is also a motive and a much higher one. So this will to rule is the will to control oneself. And as DK has told us, it does little good to seek to discipline a Leo type outwardly. They have to achieve their own self-discipline. Self-mastery and control of the personality, the regulation, perhaps under Regulus, of the lower self and of the personality. And it is also the same tendency which leads him finally to control the personality, which is, in its integrated nature, essentially ruled by Leo, to control the personality of groups and large or small bodies of people. So there is this urge, through the will to rule, to control that which is lower, and the personality of groups, and large and small bodies, are considered to be secondary to the controlling factor. This makes the Leo subject a dominant leader of aggregations. Making the Leo subject the dominant ruler of aggregations of people. This, at an advanced stage, is an expression of the fusion of the Leo energy and the Aquarian potency. From a negative perspective, the Third Reich came into being, I think it was on January 30th, it's an Aquarian group dominated by a Leo personality. But of course there can also be, and we look forward to the positive expressions which promote the freedom of the members of such groups, with the attitude of the leader being that of the servant leader. The idea in the Bible is that he who would be first and foremost, let him serve. So the Aquarius Leo potency, Leo Aquarius potency, will be emerging into great power during the next 2,000 or so years. And we will see the emergence of dominant individuals and large aggregations of people with respect to whom they play this dominating role. A sign is never simply, processional age is never simply given to one sign alone. The opposite sign is of great importance. So, it is inevitable, says Decay, in the long run for men and races. For this, all experience in Leo is preparatory. We will have a one humanity, strongly influenced by the sign and potency of Aquarius. It will be creative. It will be a unity which respects diversity. It will be a proper division of labor, an understanding of hierarchy, an understanding of the proper modes of advancement, and a true spiritual community in which the best abilities of the individual are promoted. Leo can help with this process by offering a demonstration of true excellence through the soul-infused, spirit-infused personality of dominating and guiding individuals. I'm reminded of Plato's Republic with his thought that at its head must be the well-prepared, highly schooled, highly trained, extremely capable philosopher king. It is a hierarchical structure that he conceived for the best guidance of society. But there was nothing about the preparation of the philosopher king, which was arbitrary. A meritocracy was in effect, and only an individual who had proved himself repeatedly along the way under the most rigorous tests could serve in this type of Leonian role, Leonian Aquarian role. When I think of Plato, I wonder whether either the sign Leo or Aquarius was present in his horoscope. Sometimes when looking at the stone bust of his visage, it seems like one or other of these signs would be present. The will to illumine is that which drives all Leo people on to experiment and so to gain knowledge. They put themselves in the midst of experience and they gain direct knowledge, not just theoretical. And they use themselves as the center of experience. I've known some Leo individuals of this kind. They try it out themselves. It is this which links them to Taurus through the factor of knowledge, Taurus which carries the fair jewel, which gives light upon its forehead. So let's just say here that these two signs and their subjects are linked through a relation to knowledge, and also through the will to promote light. In the relationship of Taurus, Leo, Aquarius, you have a significant and important zodiacal triangle as far as the man is concerned, and it is peculiarly significant to the fourth creative hierarchy, the human hierarchy. So here is, we've been talking about Leo and Aquarius, and now Taurus and Leo, so hence we can make a triangle of this. And it is, it has much to do with the light, with the greatest light, with self-illumination, and with the distribution of the great light o'er all the land and sea. If we look at the kinds of light that are found in these three signs, we will find perhaps some interesting connections. Taurus, the penetrating light of the path. This is a beam of light streaming forth from the point in Aries and revealing the area of light control. Leo, the light of the soul, a reflected point of light, logoic or divine. The light diffused in Cancer focuses and reveals eventually a point. And due to the existence of that point, the sense of centralized identity grows. With Aquarius, the light that shines on earth across the sea. This is the light which ever shines within the dark and cleansing with its healing rays, that which must be purified until the dark has gone. Of course, there are 12 types of zodiacal light, but these three are especially associated with the light, the great light, the concentration of the light, and the distribution of the light accordingly. DK has another point of view here. You will see, therefore, with Taurus, the incentive towards experience in order to gain knowledge. We rush forward as the bull rushes forward into experience in order to acquire the understanding of how things work, the understanding of the interrelations of things. The fifth ray is involved, interestingly, with Taurus and the Venus rulership. So the accumulation of knowledge is one of the chief Taurian objectives. With Leo, we the expression of experience in order to justify knowledge. By justify, I suppose we mean to prove the validity of knowledge, especially to the experiencer. Again, the fifth ray is involved, interestingly enough. This is the fifth sign. The fifth ray expresses through this constellation and thus through this sign. With Aquarius, the use of experience, which has been gained and justified, which has been gained and proven valid, in order to make the gained knowledge a factor in service. So, which has been accumulated and confirmed in order to be used in service. So the ability to apply knowledge is very strong in Aquarius, to prove or justify it or validate it in Leo, and to simply acquire it in Taurus. Sometimes when I look at the Tibetans' work and even of the image which has been circulated of him, and of which he is said to have said that it is a pretty fair likeness, I wonder whether Taurus is not involved in his chart as well as Gemini. Certainly his knowledge is voluminous, but of course he has proven it for himself, and at the same time he is using it extensively in service. He is the factor of distribution of this universal knowledge. Is a big factor in the Tibetan's mission. This triangle expresses the, and when you look at a triangle like this, you say, well, okay, there's a lot of fifth ray connections here. And are there any planets which are found in all of them? Well, Uranus is found. If we get into decanate rulers, Venus is shared by two. There are important connections. They're all on the fixed cross. They deal with the blinding light of Taurus, the fiery pain of Leo, and the liberative potential of Aquarius, liberation through service. They are respectively the sign of the new group of world servers, Taurus, the sign of the positive disciple or initiate who has gained true self-knowledge and realizes that he is the soul, that he is the one in Leo, and the sign of hierarchy, which is Aquarius, with its humanitarian task of wisely distributing knowledge, light, love, and power for the elevation of humanity, but wisely distributing. It's not necessarily the pouring out of too much, which can be a destructive act and towards which the second ray types are prone. If we will read in Esoteric Healing about the diseases to which the second ray lord is prone through excess. This triangle expresses the life of humanity as it demonstrates finally the perfection of the consummation of the human way. So it's Leo. Well, let's start with Taurus. Taurus, Leo, Aquarius, demonstrating the life of humanity. Of course, by the time we reach Aquarius, we are truly serving, and we are selfless. We have we realize that Aquarius overcomes the often selfish tendencies, accumulative selfish tendencies of Taurus, and the self-accentuating tendencies of Leo. This doesn't mean that there are not extreme Aquarians who are selfish for themselves or selfish for their group, but the ideal here is one of distributing all that has been accumulated and justified. There's another triangle of a somewhat similar nature. It involves Leo. It looks like it deals with the evolution of the Christ consciousness. But these three, the Leo, Virgo, and Pisces, perhaps more related to the second act, second aspect, produce a still more subtle consciousness, expression of consciousness. So is this triangle related to the second aspect of divinity? Well, with Virgo and Pisces, you would think so. It looks like self-consciousness, Christ consciousness, and then the consciousness of the Savior. So a more subtle expression of consciousness can be understood. Yes, Leo, the self-conscious man, personality, the lower unity. Virgo, the latent Christ life or principle. It's kind of a merging, interactive duality. I'll put that down. And it's interesting how many of these triangles move from a lower unity through a duality to a higher unity. And Pisces, the group conscious soul, the world savior, higher unity. And we just studied, didn't we, Leo, Scorpio, Capricorn. Similarly, in terms of lower unity, conflicting dualities, and higher unity, also associated with group consciousness. Pisces is really the climax of the identity of and sensitivity of the group conscious soul. The world savior can save because he knows intuitively and immediately that which is found within man. So we have been discussing three triangles. Well, maybe more than that, really. But let's at least list them so we keep our recollections. Triangles. We've been discussing Leo, Scorpio, Capricorn. We've been discussing Taurus, Leo, and Aquarius. We've been discussing Leo, Virgo, and Pisces. And I should not forget this originating triangle of crisis, which has been left out of the nine signs related by planetary rulership to Virgo, including itself. And that would be Leo, Libra, and Capricorn. We have to collect the significant triangles which DK has presented to us and try to realize the destiny, the objective of these triangulating potencies, seeing how they are active in the life of man, now and in the future, and also in our individual horoscope. I think we should not forget Leo, Pisces, and Capricorn, which is the triangle that DK will elaborate extensively in the second part of the book, each one of which has kind of a six-fold progression, such as Great Bear, Leo, Saturn, Shambhala, head center, base of spine center, and so it goes. In this case, we see the first, second, and third rays with Leo, Pisces, and Capricorn, and probably in every one of these triangles, the three aspects are in some way represented. So we should be, I suppose, on what we call triangle alert, as the knowledge that DK is presenting here accumulates, and we get a clearer and clearer idea of the relationships found in this great jigsaw puzzle of interacting energies. You will note how consistently the emphasis is laid upon consciousness and its progressive unfoldment, and not upon the form, and the aggregation of forms which veil the conscious entity of whatever nature or being. This is, we're dealing with an astrology of consciousness when we deal with esoteric astrology. Many things can happen to the form, good or bad, comfortable or uncomfortable, but it does not make so much difference in terms of our present planetary objectives and the general objectives of our second solar system. Perhaps in the previous major solar system, what happened in the realm of form building was of paramount importance, and the growth of consciousness was secondary, of course. With the solar logos working through such a system, obviously there's going to be a growth of consciousness. But we are differentiating ourselves from the normal astrology with what's going to happen to me. If you think about it, normal astrology has the question, what will happen to me? But what is that me? Usually the personality. It's not about what will I learn, what will I know, what degree of sensitivity will be achieved, how will my consciousness expand, how will I become more sensitive and embracing of others and their states of consciousness. No, we have now the astrology of consciousness emerging, and thus it fits that the wheel in a way turns in two directions, or let's just say in any whole, energy currents can operate in two ways, one that reinforces the dominance of the form and the other that reinforces the emergence and eventual dominance of the consciousness factor. Just as the treatise on cosmic fire endeavored to give the psychological key to the secret doctrine and to interpret the underlying consciousness which the beings considered in the secret doctrine express, see, that's what it really means, this psychological key to the secret doctrine. What type of consciousness do the great beings express? And how do the qualities of these consciousnesses interact? So in a treatise on the seven rays, I am carrying on the same idea, at the same time seeking to give the needed key to modern esoteric psychology. So in a way, the treatise on cosmic fire was a, how can we put it, kind of a cosmic psychology. So let's look at it this way. TCF, a kind of cosmic psychology, and treatise on seven rays, offering the more microcosmic keys. In other words, we'll learn something about the psychology, not just of our planet or of the entity humanity or of the solar logos and the entities beyond, but we will learn something about modern individual man and how he is to handle his own psychological problem so that his psyche may truly evolve in a spiritual manner. So this is part of this second ray presentation called A Treatise on the Seven Rays. It's the third volume, fittingly so, I guess, because astrology is such a third ray science. And you kind of wonder about the order of the books, two on psychology, one on astrology, one on healing, then one on initiation and education, with the light of the fifth ray correlating with the fifth treatise. You wonder about the fourth ray, healing, harmony, balance, and so forth. And also some indications as to the astrological key to the secret doctrine. Some indications. He's not certainly giving the entire astrological key to the secret doctrine. Some have thought that their presentations do offer the astrological key to the secret doctrine, but I think it's premature to think so. Before Master Didier continues to write on astrology, as he will after 2025, he says, he just might have a little more to say, and what he may say may well dwarf our speculations, our present speculations as to what may be the astrological key to the secret doctrine. I mean, contributions have been made, no question. I'm the first to admit that and say that's all to the good, but let us not yet hope for a degree of completeness in formulating the astrological key to the secret doctrine, which is highly improbable given the present state, the incomplete state of our knowledge. So the entities dealt with in her masterpiece of Esoteric Truth, you know, and I don't think DK uses words idly when he has a word like masterpiece. It is probably the key by means of which HBB opened the door to mastership. In the Rurik work, Helena Rurik seems to believe that HBB took a Hungarian incarnation and thereby achieved mastership, so that she is now, he, she, however, Master Blavatsky, or some other name of which we know nothing. And I've always felt that there was a very strong connection between HBB and Master R. In a way, she, that great soul, belongs to Master M. But there was instruction for Cagliostro, her former incarnation, by Master R, and is the third ray monad prevailing? Certainly the brilliance of mind of HBB was astonishing. And one thinks also of the proposed third ray monad of the Tibetan, just as the Buddha has that type of monadic ray, and the way that the Tibetan was able to relate to HBB in terms of knowledge, and how she took down this voluminous expression of knowledge and originated, or at least organized so much of it herself. So there's some third-ray connection there, I think. I think this is my proposal, you know. I can be proved to be incorrect or correct as time elapses between Master R and his third-ray monad, the Tibetan and his proposed third-ray monad, just as the Buddha has the third-ray monad, and possibly with HBB and that incredible capacious brilliance of mind, a third ray monad, possibly. Anyway, she wrote a masterpiece of esoteric truth. The entities dealt with in her masterpiece of esoteric truth are here revealed as cosmic, solar, and planetary influences evoking in response to their outpoured energy of vibration, vibratory activity, an awakening consciousness in the form so that it becomes aligned to or closely related to their own. These entities evoke response. No. No, that's not it either. Response from the form, and a greater alignment from the consciousness within the form with their own consciousness. So, in the Secret Doctrine, those who have been reading in it, the planetary gods, the Prajapati and so forth are referenced, but the deep astrology and the psychology of that astrology, which the Tibetan gave in his second installment, is not there to be found. It's elaborated later by the Tibetan in Cosmic Fire and in this book, Esoteric Astrology. So this was a foundational work, and then the elaboration and the greater detail entered with the Tibetan's second outpouring through Alice Bailey. So the entities awaken consciousness in lesser form. lamps. Let's put that down. The great entities awaken consciousness in lesser forms. All revelations appear to emerge into the consciousness of the race in their lowest or most material form because the ascent of knowledge towards wisdom is always the key to progress. So we always begin with the exoteric and work our way into the esoteric. We must begin with the foundation, which is exoteric, and work our way up into the esoteric. And therefore, exoteric psychology and exoteric mundane astrology had to precede the revelation of their significance, and let us just say, the larger context was revealed later. The nature of form had to be made apparent, and man accustomed to it before the meaning behind the form could be revealed. So, first knowledge of the form, and then knowledge of the meaning of the form. And only then knowledge of the meaning of the form in a wider context. This is how progress is made. And certainly when we look at the development of the human being, we're dealing first with the development of the physical nature, then emotional, then mental, then personal, then his soul or consciousness aspect, and then, only then, his spirit aspect. All progress in nature proceeds gradually, and the leaps that are occasionally made are long prepared, the Tibetan assures us. Apparent leaps of development are long prepared. Right. So you may ask, he says, what is the reason for this mode of procedure? And I can give you one among many which, with a little intuitive reflection, you know, pondering and awaiting, should be convincing to you. The understanding and the reasoning powers of the soul are complete and developed, but souls oriented towards incarnation and the will to sacrifice have not as yet the necessary forms in the three worlds which are adequate for the expression of the knowledge which the soul has on its own plane. So, and level of awareness. So, we human beings who are souls in incarnation are building up necessary vehicles of expression. Are building up necessary vehicles of expression so that what we know interiorly can be expressed, well, let's just say registered and expressed through lower substance. If the inner meanings of the outer symbolic forms of existence were registered by an unprepared form, and by that type of form he means the response apparatus of the soul in the three worlds, and in the case of man involving an unprepared and undeveloped nervous system, glandular system, and brain, the destruction of the form by soul energy would naturally supervene, and a shattering of the lower expression would take place. So what do we conclude from this? Thus, gradualism is protective. And in the building process, the different developments cannot happen all at once. simultaneous action, registration, consciousness is reserved for a later time when the mechanism of expression has been completely built. Then can come the registration of the higher energies without destructive effect. So we are dealing with a gradual form-building process to which we have to apply our concrete mind and attention. And I guess what's being said here is how important is patience in this building process. And here again we have Vulcan with his great powers of endurance, persistence, his committed carrying through over time. If you think about it, Saturn is the lord of time and Vulcan is persistent through time. Saturn is lord of time and Vulcan, persistence through time. So it is here that the significance and purpose of time can be noted and intelligently employed, even though time is, from a higher point of view, an illusion. Time, as we know it, is, from a higher point of view, an illusion. But this involves a most definite development of the esoteric sense. So if we're going to use time wisely, if we are to use time wisely, our consciousness must be intuitive. Intuitive. We must be rooted somewhat in the timeless worlds in order to use time wisely, without delay, without undue haste, but appropriately to the building of the form. So certainly the use of time in a wise manner is a necessary foundation to the overcoming of our sense of time in consciousness. Everything has to be built in a way from below, though guided from above. Built from the heights, and thus shew forth the value of the depths, we are told in a fifth-ray stanza. Probably the law of repulse for the fifth ray. So it is to preserve the mechanism that we must work gradually. We must prepare the form so that it can play its part in the divine plan and not allow the higher energies to enter in an unregulated manner, enter an unprepared form in an unregulated manner. All of this is under law and order and is most clearly regulated from the inner planes. I'm remembering a conversation between that DK wrote about it, between Master KH and Master DK, and they were discussing the life of the disciple Roberto Saggioli, FCD, as he was known. And they talked about the wisdom of widening the channel into his mechanism. Apparently this was within their power to do. But they decided, and especially I think Master KH decided, that it would not be wise at this time, because Roberto Saggioli was already sufficiently sensitive. And if the channel were unduly widened, it might produce, I suppose, some disorganization or some oversensitivity, which might, in a way, compromise his discipleship work. We can't really say, as we invoke the higher powers, give it all to me now. It's kind of a first-rate thing to do. And I'm reminded of this great disciple, T. Subba Rao, who asked that all his karma be released into him at this time, and his teacher agreed. And Well, he might have cleared the decks. He got a dreadful disease and died of it. But it's probably wise to consider the limitations of form when invoking the release of energies which must eventually be expressed through those forms. Anyway, there are other reasons, DK tells us, but this one will suffice. And this has to do with other reasons for building the form before releasing the energies from the world of meaning, of significance, of being, of cause, you know, those higher energies which we must learn to support. That's part of our redemptive effort, that we can build here in the lower worlds out of the lesser lives, bringing them into relationship which will help them rise, those forms which will bear the energies which will help them rise still further. But if we disorganize the relationships in which they are already growing, then they fall behind, and our redemptive work is of no value. So there are other reasons why, in a way, we build from below in a gradual manner, though all this supervised, of course, from above. But this one will suffice. In the evolutionary process, there is, therefore, first, the form. Gradually prepared, adjusted, aligned, and oriented during many eons of time. What is an eon? Well, it's a flexible term. But obviously it has to do with cycles. Behind this active form, as it steadily improves, and this is the work of Virgo very much, isn't it? Work of Virgo, the improvement of the form, or even the fourth ray, the corrector of the form, and Mercury. As it steadily improves and becomes more responsive to environment and contact, stands the slowly awakening consciousness, which we are now focused upon and which we hope will begin to awaken more rapidly now that we are, what shall I say, conscious of consciousness. As we are now increasingly conscious of consciousness, anticipate that that the consciousness will awaken more rapidly. This is the thinking, intuiting, loving soul, which tightens its hold, and when we read that, what planet do we think of? Which tightens its hold over its response apparatus. This is, obviously, we know, the work of Vulcan. Avails itself upon every possible occasion of every advance made by the form, any improvement below will be exploited positively by the forces that be above, and employs every influence for the perfecting of the great work which it undertook under the law of sacrifice. The soul, our soul nature, the solar angel, he is operating under the law of sacrifice. And we as monads, as lords of persevering, ceaseless devotion, are operating under the law of sacrifice, interestingly, a fourth ray law correlated with our fourth creative hierarchy, fourth kingdom, so we are essentially a sacrificing kingdom. Humanity is a sacrificing kingdom, and the fourth creative hierarchy, a sacrificing hierarchy. You know, if one goes slowly in these matters, word for word, phrase by phrase, line by line, paragraph by paragraph, I suppose it's the second ray method, careful pondering on what has been written, looking for the implications. It's just astonishing what decay over this period of 30 years has managed to put into his books. And then, of course, the appreciation for Alice Bailey as she, over the years, had to live a normal outer life while still holding all of this. What a rigor it was for her. As DK described, for me, giving this teaching has been a labor of love, and for Alice Bailey, taking it down, a labor. A little humor there, I think. But behind the growing form is this thinking, intuiting, loving something, this consciousness, which tightens its grip, tightens its hold over its response apparatus, uses every improvement below, and employs every influence to perfect the form so that it may more fully express through the form, and thus redeem the form, and thus redeem the lesser lives which are molded into form. So this whole process is about redeeming the lesser lives gathered into form. Forms themselves, I suppose, reflect the divine plan. And within that plan, on what are they? 7 sheets of symbols on some amazingly rare and unknown substance. Those forms show the kinds of relationships, or those symbols show the kinds of relationships into which matter can be gathered, so that the constituent factors that are gathered may in fact accelerate the many organisms which are gathered into the forms. We too are gathered, we human beings are gathered into archetypal forms which facilitate our growth because of the circulation of energy within those forms. In a way, form is a expedient in order to raise the quality of the lives of the constituents of those forms. Relationship of the right kind produces acceleration, improvement, elevation. It is for this reason that I have not attempted in this treatise to prove scientifically and in the modern exoteric sense the natural response of the inner psychological factors, the natural response to the inner psychological factors and to the esoteric astrological influences. I think he's dealing more with the nature of these influences. First he has to present the structure of the science, and then the details can be worked out. These can be easily demonstrated and instantly made apparent once modern science accepts the occult premises. Of course, it's kind of protective. Science is protecting its own rather outworn paradigms by not accepting these premises, not even to work with them. Even if they accept only in an experimental and hypothetical manner, this experimental and hypothetical acceptance will demonstrate that psychological man and physiological man do respond to these influences. I'm confining myself entirely to the theme of the unfoldment of consciousness, of meaning, and of significances. This is the work accomplished in this advanced astrology book, which is still very preliminary compared to what will come in this forward-looking astrology book. Well, I think we are at the point here. This is the end of Esoteric Astrology 90, Section A. page 292. And we will go on. Esoteric Astrology Adventure 90, Section B, page 292. Slowly reading through the book, through the Leo chapter. Okay, friends, that's where we are. And I'll say goodbye and